Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. In this episode, Trisha G and Kevlin Henney, co-authors of 97 Things Every Java Programmer Should Know, highlight how to make the most out of the book and why it's not only targeted at Java developers. Created for developers, by developers, GoTo gathers the best minds in the software community. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in Chicago, Amsterdam, and Copenhagen, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech. We kicked off the conversation by asking Trisha and Kevlin, why the number 97 and why restrict it to Java?
Okay, I'm probably in the best position to answer that question. This has quite a long history. It goes back to the first 97 Things book. So that's actually, I have to have that here. 97 Things Every Software Architect Should Know by Richard Monson Hayful. This book was born on Bruce Eckel's programming list, and Bruce Eckel, the author of Thinking in Java. Richard asked people, I'm doing a talk. What are 10 things that every software architect should know? And everybody came up with so many suggestions. He said, you know what, there might be a book in this. Lots of independent suggestions. And so he went and spoke to Mike Lakides at O'Reilly. And the idea was like, yep, let's go for it. How many should we have? And it was going to be around 100. But 100 is a bit of an obvious number. And as Richard said, 99 and 101 are trying too hard not to be 100. So 97 gives you the right kind of figure. If you've got about 2 pages per piece, that gives you a book of the order of 200 or so pages, which is just about right. And so he chose 97. Avoided 98. 97 has nice properties of being prime and other stuff. I'm sure that wasn't in Richard's factoring. But yeah. Then that became a series. It got hard-coded as 97 Things. Which I actually found frustrating. I edited a previous book, 97 Things Every Programmer Should Know, which I have somewhere. There we go. And I remember doing the selection process for that, and I came down to 99, a final list of 99. That was really hard to get the last two selected. So, yeah, the standard lesson, kids, don't hard code numbers into anything. We knew this, but that's why it ended up in the book. But I guess going on from that, is there was a kind of period of a hiatus, and then they kind of relaunched and started talking about doing the series, picking it up again. And a few years ago, I was approached about this. And unfortunately, I didn't have the time to do many things, but we settled on the idea we should do one for Java, because that has a very large and very broad user base. The number of people who use Java, the number of places that Java exists, and also the fact that it's so cross-platform in many ways. I mean, JVM is the platform, but the fact that it touches everything was kind of the interest. It's like, okay, well, we should do that. And that was kind of the initial thinking. And then as we were progressing, it was kind of like, okay, we need to have a sort of a broader reach. And that's when you got involved, Trisha, because Zan McQuay from O'Reilly got in touch with you because you'd already contributed. I get to say this because at that point you weren't the co-editor. You already contributed 3 really good pieces. and so that was this idea of, okay, so that's going to give us a really different kind of approach and a much broader base, pulling in a very different grouping of people.
Yeah, it was really fun to get involved at that point. I think Zanon, you got me involved because I pointed a bunch of people your way, like, oh, you should ask this person and you should talk to this person and let me introduce you to this person. And so it just got sort of flowed fairly naturally from there. Like, well, why don't you kind of help out like creating this book?
Yeah, you're quite good at this. But the best bit is that there were loads of complete different people I wouldn't have contacted, but also on your hit list, it turns out I had a hit list, and there was a really strong overlap in certain areas. It's like, okay, we are of a similar mind on this one, which was really good. So
yeah
but I think that was one of the other things is we also managed one of the things I'm actually really pleased about with this is it is a really good cross-section with 97 things. One of the things that you can end up with, and some of the books in the series have ended up with, is a very strong skew. Some people submit lots. I mean, it's like, you know, this is it's like open source software in the sense that there are some people who do loads and loads of commits and really contribute a lot, and then there are some people who just do one. And yeah, certainly my experience with the other books is that sometimes you've got one person submitting up to 8 or 9 pieces, and we put in place fairly early on the threshold of 3. So that actually pushes out the grouping. So we ended up with 73 contributors, which is a really good cross-section. It's one of those things that I think one of the nice things about these books is, and we got all of the contributors on the cover. So that was always a feature of these books, is to have contributors on the cover. It's just like, this is not my nutritious book, this is their book. We kind of acted as conduits, and it's just like, yep, we're come in, yeah, sure, yeah, show us really cool stuff. And so there was that aspect, but I think that also is very obvious. There's a lot of different points of view in the book, which I think is the other thing, is that sometimes people will misquote the title as the 97 things every journalist should know. And I'm always keen to say, no, this is just 97. It's a sample of a much bigger
story. 97 things.
Yeah. And I think that was really, that was quite key. And I think if you look at what we've got, it's a really good cross-section.
I think another confusion there is that, I read some of the reviews. Like, you should never read reviews. It's like reading comments on YouTube. But I read some of the reviews, and some of the reviews are like, oh, these 97 things are contradictory. But that's very much part of the point, because our industry is like that. And the ultimate answer for everything is, it depends. So if it depends, then one right answer in one circumstance is not the same right answer in another circumstance. So it's really important to have like 73 different voices talking about 97 different things, some of which are contradictory. And sometimes it can even be the same author doing two contradictory points of view, because, you know, that's the reality of software. And this is the sort of thing that, with this book, I felt very strongly it's the kind of thing that you want to wave it at university students so that they can get confused about what the real world is like. Because at university with computer science and things, it's like, this is the right answer, this is the right way, this is how you do things. And the reality is that that's not really true. There are some good things to do. Like, I think you and I both were keen on making sure that testing is in there a lot, because automated testing is important, coverage is important, understanding performance implications is important, but you have to know what those limits are. But the rest of it is like, yeah, there's not really any right or wrong answers. There's different approaches, and find the right approaches for you and the team and the domain. And so it can be quite a confusing book, because you can read it and be like, okay, so are certifications a good thing or are they a bad thing? Should we do full coverage, or should we just kind of like wave a finger in the air and just write the tests that we kind of want to see?
Yeah.
You know, I like that.
I think that was one of the things that I think, and that was certainly one of the philosophy I had before. But I think we were both very much like, okay, we need somebody else to have a counterpoint to this piece. So it very much that idea of like, the book is not some kind of magical single source of truth. It is supposed to be this representation, this sampling of the Javaverse, all these different voices and different points of view, and where there is something that people hold a different view on, and I think your example of certifications is a really good one. It's like, well, let's get two sides of that story, and actually actively seek out, rather than give people, although we both have particular views on certain things, it's like, well, yeah, but that's not our job here. Our job is to try and get that voice. So sometimes, and I had that criticism of the previous book as well, and it is a case of like, no, it's not a sold deal. Although I have a preference, your preference may be different, but we're going to offer you the information, especially where there are two sides. Let us show you there are two sides here. And the testing one, if you actually try and do the testing exactly according to the pieces we've got so many different points of view on testing. If you actually try and do it, you will find contradictions. And that's not a hard thing. It isn't this sugar-coated, you know, year one, year two, you know, computer science course. That's definitely not what it is.
Yeah, it was nice to get all those different opinions and different backgrounds in there. I also like the fact that obviously it's the Java book, so there's a lot of people from the Java world. You talked about the fact that I pulled in some different voices that you didn't have access to. I tried to pull in a bunch of the Java champions, because that's kind of one of my groups. Yeah. But I also made an effort to pull in people who are not, they have like they have like 20 years industry experience, but not necessarily 20 years experience programming Java at the keyboard, because we have to open our eyes. We have to look beyond just the code. We have to see what makes you a good developer. And it's not necessarily writing lines of if statements. It's who do you talk to? How do you communicate with them? Like, how do you get involved in the community? I was really keen to showcase that it's important to be part of a Java user group. And why is it important? Not because like you have to give back to the community, but because you get a lot out of it and it helps you, you know. It's actually quite a selfish thing.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, because there is that sense of it, in fact, I think that if we play around with the title a bit, it's not 97 things you should know about Java. It is, you are a programmer, this is your profession, what do you need to know? You happen to concentrate your technology in the Java area, but that is not the only thing that you're going to do. You need to have a much broader, a well-rounded view. And I think that community aspect, because I think that's one of the things I often associate with the Java universe. And we often talk about it, there's the JVM, it's not just the language. So we've got a couple of groovy things in there, Kotlin, Clojure. But it's also, there is the JVM mechanics, then there's the ecosystem all the way out through your tooling, then your tests. And then actually, what about the people? What about interviewing? What about community? All of these things. This is what it takes, not to know about just about Java, but to be a programmer in this space. I think it's really important. And that's one of those things that makes the book, I think, more generally applicable than just, is this book just for Java programmers? Well, that's its primary target audience. But a lot of the advice, even the code advice, actually, a lot of the code advice is actually applicable outside Java. It just clearly has an intended primary audience, but actually there's a load of other people that benefit and have benefited from this, actually.
So I have a friend, he's a Node.js JavaScript guy, and also like big data and stuff like that. So, and he did Java at university, like many people do. And he read the book, because I've got like a stack of them on my shelf. He's like, oh, can I borrow that? And he read it, he's like, this is great. This is really, there's loads of stuff in here that I learned. I don't need to go back to Java. I don't intend to do any more Java, but I learned a boatload from this book, because A, I can read Java, so that's helpful. But B, there's a whole broad spectrum of stuff, like the community stuff, like how to grow your career, like how to ace interviews, stuff like that, that are applicable across the board. And for me, I can't decide. Obviously, I feel like that's a strength of the book, but I also feel like it's a weakness, and you can't easily market it to the other developers. JavaScript developers, C developers, C Sharp developers, they can all read Java. It's not necessarily applicable. They don't care about which version of Java or which libraries they're using. The code is still readable to them. But it's difficult to sort of sell it to a C# developer and say, you should read this. But you should, because there's a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah. I think that is the thing. Is any good, for a lot of books, any good book on programming normally says more than just the thing that it set out to do. Because you can't just put this in a box to be a good, here's things you should know as a Java programmer that are not, you should not know as somebody else. It would be a very odd kind of title, but it would be a ridiculously hard thing to boundary. So I think there's a lot there, and that kind of leads to, there is this interesting question that I've been asked, is like, having been involved in these two books a decade apart, although I'd like to point out that when the 97 things, we didn't have a pandemic 10 years ago. That was new. That was a new twist. But I guess it did allow you and me to actually finish the edits on the book quite nicely. Suddenly it's like, oh, okay, we're not traveling around and doing stuff. It's actually have time at home to sit through and make final selections on this. There was that. So there's an interesting one. It's like there's a question of overlap. And I will say the first thing is, because it's a book that has chosen a language, there is code in this book, but there's a lot more code in this book because it has made a choice of language. So I find that if I look back at the 97 things every programmer should know, some of the advice is a little broader. perhaps a little more generic. Occasionally somebody will launch into a piece of code, but there's less of that. Whereas by saying we're doing Java, we have the opportunity to say, let's get specific. Let me show you exactly what I mean. And indeed, that was a license as well. We see it with the Kotlin code and the Groovy code. It's like people much more open to let's include codes. There's a lot more detail here, which I found kind of gratifying. So that was really nice. But it is that's the difference there. It is specific, and again, you can learn from it even if you're not a Java programmer. But because we've said here is the language, we can be much more specific. So that has a value in it. Of course, it does anchor it a little bit potentially in time, because you know if we drop the book into it, you know, there's a few things that are mentioned there that are going to change definitely within the next 2 or 3 years. And if we were to look at it 10 years time, there are a number of things that I expect the world will have moved on in a number of very key ways, both from the ecosystem point of view, what the VM allows you to do, but also the language. But on the whole, there's a reasonable core kind of timelessness to it. And there's a few things that will probably age a little more rapidly than the others.
Yeah, I agree. I think that overall, probably 80% or more of the book will be absolutely fine in 10 years' time. Even the technical pieces, obviously there was a certain element of, there was a certain emphasis on things like streams, the streams API, how to use it, which is Java 8, which Java 8 now is I think it's like 5 years old now. But it's still, that's the one most Java programmers are on. But I think things like the streams API, this is sort of thing that you're going to have to grasp as a developer, like from now on, regardless of, you know, whether it's 10 years time or not. Some of the other pieces, we had to be a little bit careful about whether that's going to change over time. So for example, I wanted to be careful to make sure that the var word was like used where appropriate, because you know we don't have to have all the boilerplate all the time. And that came in Java 10 and will become probably more used as people evolve their versions of Java. Similarly, records is on its way. So some of the stuff about, like, again, reducing boilerplate and how to write nice domain objects, there has to be a certain caveat to some of those pieces. Like when records comes, this is going to change. So it was a bit difficult to balance the technology with the going forward. But I think we did a reasonable job of that. Even the JVM stuff that you were talking about, and we tried to be fairly general. There's a piece on garbage collection, but it's more about how do you sort of understand the garbage collector? What does matter? What doesn't matter? There are other multiple garbage collectors which will be coming in over time, and about JVM optimization. The fact that is that a lot of developers, when they learn Java to begin with, they kind of learn Java the language. They don't necessarily understand the JVM platform. They shouldn't have to. So a couple of pieces explaining that the JVM optimizes stuff, developers don't really need to know how, why, explicitly, like what's happening under the covers. Just a few pieces explaining that it does happen is enough, I think, to open people's eyes and sort of say, you know, this is something to be aware of. And in 10 years' time, it might optimize it differently. But the fact is the JVM is doing optimization for you. So don't pre-optimize your code, for example.
Yeah, and in other words, what people are going to learn from that is there's a principle here that's at stake, and you know that's the message to pick up. But I think there's also that other interesting side that when looking at some of the pieces, there is this recognition that. And that's actually kind of the value, because you know we're kind of like the 25 years of Java mark when this book came out, that there is a legacy spread. People are dealing at different times. Not everybody is sitting there going like, oh, I can't wait, and you know, I can barely wait for the next release of Java. I'm going to use all of the experimental features and absolutely everything in my code. That's not people's reality. And for some people, it's a case of like, oh, I pine for Java streams. I would love to be able to do that. But actually, we're on a version that's Java 7. You know, this, you know, and that the point there is that it's a case of like, although the book has a time spread in it and at certain parts will age, the thing is that the way that the industry is, actually there's a sort of a sedimentation, a glacial sedimentation of like, oh, okay, for some people, some of this stuff, even in 5 years' time, is going to tell them new things that they don't see in their code base, and things that are only just being accessed. And so I think that is actually a lot of people's reality. Recently I sat in on a team that were making a decision about moving to Java 8. And, you know,
oh, bless them. Recently, bless them. I feel sorry for them.
Well, that's just, this is the last few weeks, you know. So the point there is not everybody is where the excitement is. It turns out there's this trail. So again,
quite rightly as well, because enterprises, they need that stability. I want to look at diversity. I would actually like to lead on from what you were saying about the previous version of 97 things every developer should know versus every Java developer should know. So just first up, I did like the first book. I did read it. And I already knew you, Kevlin, when I read it. So I was like, oh, this is Kevlin's book, so it must be good. But I do remember when I was leafing through it, as a woman developer, I was a bit like, there are not that many voices like my voice in this book. And I'm sure that because I understand how difficult it is in this industry, I'm sure you worked really hard to try and get that diversity of voices. I'm pleased with what we achieved for 97 Things Every Java Programmer Should Know. We did, again, I would love to have a book where it's 50% women's voices. And I would love to have more people of color and more other like diversity across the board. But we did okay with the gender diversity for 97 Things.
And that was it's interesting you say, because that was one of those things. So again, it's this whole thing about having people's image on the front. There are 8 women on the cover of this. There are, by coincidence, 73 contributors to this book. And I had at the time, and I put in quite a lot of effort trying to reach out to various groups. And I was kind of pleased with my results when I look at the kind of the glass ceiling effect. Going to conferences, I would notice that you expect whatever I see in the office and people's offices, it was 1 in 20 speakers were women. And so I was really trying to push that number up. And 1 in 10, yes, that is up. But I found at the time that was not enough. I was not entirely pleased with that. And I had 2 really interesting comments from people, and it was quite interesting at the time. One comment was from, and they're both men. One comment was, you got a lot of women for this book. And the other one was, you didn't get very many women from this book. And one of them was in software development and the other one was not. The one who was in software development said, wow, you managed to get a lot. Somebody from another profession said, you didn't get very many. And I said, yeah, I know. I got as many as I could at the time, but that's something I would like to concentrate on. So that was an explicit agenda point in my head that any other book that I did was going to really try and address that, which is fortunately also something that you strongly believed in and pulled the connections. And we managed 1 in 3. So that's not 50-50. But what I like about what we did, particularly as in the book has people's photographs on the front. And one of the most common things is people have that experience. Do I see me when I, you know, doesn't matter what the profession is. Is there a person like me in that space on the cover of that book or in that movie, whatever the profession is, do I see me? And I think that 97 Things Every Java Programmer does a better job of, do I see me? Yes, I probably do. There's a lot more, the probability is a lot higher. And 50-50 would be great, but 1 in 3, I would say if I've got all the other 97 Things books, there are 6 at this point, and our book has the best representation of all 6, definitely.
And you were talking about when you went to offices, you didn't see the same representation at conferences. My experience is that in technical careers, generally we see about 20% women, generally speaking, roughly. It's difficult to get the numbers. So getting 30% women in the book is good, because again, it's pushing that up. But I would like to see 50%, because what I want to do is I would like to see, like you say, I want people to be able to see themselves, and I would like to do better if we do something in future in terms of like racial diversity and things like that as well. Because I think we should be representing like where we want to be, not where we are. 50-50 would be nice.
I think that's the timelessness. I think, again, that ties in there as well. It's that idea of what will this look like in 10 years' time? We have a choice here about setting the direction, and that idea of making sure that people look at that and go, yeah, this actually makes sense. In fact, that they don't notice. That would be the really nice thing. That would be the really nice thing, that it is not, they don't say, oh, that was an artifact of the past. If actually they can say this was forward thinking, or that they actually don't notice, that they think, oh, this is okay. This is not unusual in some respect. And I think
it is. It is something that you have to work at, though. I mean, I get, obviously, as a woman in technology, I get asked a lot about how to fix the women in technology problem, which is a bit difficult because I'm like, well, I'm already here, so I don't really need it fixing. And I don't really know what's broken because I made it. But, you know, a lot of people, a lot of conferences, a lot of collections ask me, like, how to get better representation for women specifically. And it is, think about it first and foremost. Don't tack it on at the end. Don't go, we've got 73 contributors. Oh, only two are women. Quick, let's get some more women. You have to do it right at the beginning. You have to reach out. The women in our industry, particularly when you're looking at the women Java champions and the women conference speakers, are enormously overloaded because they are trying to be role models. They are bearing the brunt of the fact that there's less representation for women. So they are speaking at more conferences, doing more events, writing more articles, writing more books if they can. So they're already overburdened. So you kind of have to get them early and get them bought in and also tell them like what's in it for them.
Yeah. I mean, this thing is that you are weighed down with the burden of like, hey, you're not just technical. You've got to be an ambassador as well. That is part of the responsibility, which is a burden. But also I think all the way across, there's this idea, and actually we were quite clear when we were talking to O'Reilly about a couple of other things, when we came to discussing the back blurb, there was this idea of like, here we have 97 things from the best Java programmers in the world. And like, we both pushed back on that. It's like, no, that's not what the book was composed of. We're not saying these are the best in the world. That's not our ranking. In fact, it was this idea that what we're doing is we're getting 97 things. They're not even necessarily the best 97. They fit together the best. There is a construct there. And this is not all just famous people. And I think that's the problem, is that some people self-select out or perceive, oh, well, you know, I can't contribute to that because that's a book where big names are contributing. It's like, no. Most Java developers are not big names. And so therefore, there's this idea of like, everybody can come and contribute to this. And I think it's that idea of participation, invitation and participation, is that involvement, I think, that is quite hard. And sometimes when people look at the idea of a book or a conference, they see that they perceive an extra hurdle there. And it's the ways that you've got to do, as you said, you've got to get this right from the beginning, and you cannot present people with a huge great step at the end and say, now jump over this. It's a case of like, let's get that right there. Let's lower that right at the beginning. We're interested in your voice and what you have to think.
Is that what you said at the beginning? It's about voices, and voices isn't just the people at the top. You're never going to change everything by having the people at the top always saying stuff, because you hear them all the time. Yeah. You can hear the people, the CTOs, the leaders, I'm not going to name names, the people in the community who I don't necessarily approve of. You hear their voices all the time. Like, we don't need a book full of people like that. We need a book full of the real people, the real developers, the real people who are doing the work, walking the walk, not just the people who go to conferences and like chat about stuff like how it would be if everything was lovely. Like, that's not the reality of the situation. And I like the Java community because it's a community, because we're real people, because we help each other. I really, you know, I speak to a lot of women specifically in other technical communities, and I get the feeling that every community is different for different reasons, but I get the feeling that one of the benefits of the Java community is that we really do want to help each other. We really do see value in every individual. And if your point of view is different to my point of view, then I should listen to that, because maybe there's something I haven't heard before, whether it's because you're more senior or more junior, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think that danger you're highlighting, that one of becoming a monoculture, is exactly what we're trying to get away from. But also those voices where people don't necessarily speak up, but they also don't just have different experiences. I think one of the most interesting things is that people will offer you points of view that you simply wouldn't have had, but they will also say it in a different way. They will write it in a different way. Couldn't you have written a book with 97 things and stuff like that? Well, yeah, actually, you can get any individual and say, right, okay, you know, get a spreadsheet or grab a piece of paper, write out, you know, here's a magic number, write out a number of things that you would recommend to people. And it would be a consistent, coherent narrative that I would never ultimately end up writing, but it would be consistent and coherent, and it would show one person's point of view. What I love about these things is not only are people coming to you with something that is different than you, to your point of view, even the things that you're familiar with, they write about in a different way. Simply, I look at a number of the pieces and it's just like, I could not have written that. Although I agree with the author or I do what the author has done, there's no way that me, you know, I could not have written that. It wouldn't be the kind of thing I'd write, but I want to read that. So that is, I think that's the other point of view, is that it's a very, that openness, that kind of, I don't know, it's almost like a collage, if you like, of points of view.
That was, it was an interesting exercise for me. It's my first attempt at editing something. I do a lot of writing, I don't do as much as I would like, but I do a lot of writing and I sort of found my voice and I have several different styles for depending on whether I'm writing for JetBrains or for myself or whatever. But when you're editing someone else's, I had to really resist rewriting it so it sounds like me. Because I'm like, that's not the point. Like you're saying, it's really about different people's sentence construction, different people's way of like leading into a problem, different, you know, I don't want to rearrange stuff or reword things. But my temptation was like, oh, I want to write it the way that I would say that. Like, no, leave it well alone.
Yeah, it's that issue of how do I help this, but how do I make this piece more of what it is rather than more of what I would say?
Yeah.
And that's a slightly different thing. And it's quite interesting because often when we talk about code, we tend to converge on a consistent or more uniform style. And there's this, and that's the basis for communication. But this is not a code base. And it's that idea of this is supposed to be a sample of this large, huge, huge space for which you could potentially have thousands upon thousands of items. But it's just like, we're going to pick 97. And it's that idea of, can we do a reasonable statistical sampling? But that they should not have the same voice. Because I think that's the other thing that's kind of quite nice about this, is that it's that you can pick a topic and do it as a kind of a lunchtime discussion or do as a group discussion, or you can read this from cover to cover. But if you're reading the same thing all the time in the same way, that's going to give you that's going to give you a very different experience. It's that idea of each, you know, at the end of two or three pages, you're now onto some, not only a different topic, but somebody else is telling you something in a different way. And that actually makes the reading of it much more enjoyable, I think.
I get asked a lot, like, how am I supposed to read this? Do I read it front to back? Do I dip in and out? And of course, the answer is, it depends.
Yeah. How do you want to read it?
You know? How do you want to read it? And I think it's an interesting book like that, because it was ordered alphabetically in the end, wasn't it? So there's no ordering, there's no narrative. It's just, I think we pick the chapters that are ordered alphabetically. So you can pick up whatever you want to do. You can, if you are interested in the codey technical type pieces, then by all means, pick them up first. If you're not a Java programmer, feel free to skip over the bits which are very specific to Java. Because there's still, like I say, I reckon about 70 or 80% of it is going to be relevant whether you're Java or not, maybe more. It's quite easy to just dive in. Like you say, I also like the idea of having it for book clubs, like pick a few articles which might be relevant for your team, your company or whatever, use them as a conversation starting point.
Yeah, or book bombing. You know, if you want to make a point to somebody, it's like, here, yeah, this is the chapter you need to read, you know. It's
right.
You know, but it is an interesting one because it is that question of how to impose a structure on 97 things, and that's why it is alphabetically ordered. And actually in the back, there's a reverse lookup, because sometimes the way that people remember things is they think, it was by somebody or other, or it was about halfway through, and to have some kind of stable structure there. And if you can go and look at the person in the back and see, oh, they wrote this. So it's kind of cross-linked like that. There's no other reasonable way to order these things unless you did actually get people to submit in particular areas. And when we look across the themes, what's interesting is although some things do stand out very obviously, you know, so I could pick, we could pick testing and say, actually, testing is a category and do that. A lot of the other pieces don't. They straddle multiple categories. And that if you did try and say, I'm going to push this into a category, it's only half in, it would mean it wasn't in another point in the book where it would also fit quite well. And so there's this kind of interesting idea of like, well, these are the voices as they are. Then it's not going to be a random order. A couple of the books are actually ordered fairly arbitrarily. I know one of the 97 Things books is ordered based on the sequence of submission, which is known to nobody but the original editor. It is a mystery. It's like kind of like saying, okay, what's the order of things in a hash map? It's, I don't know.
I think that's a really good way of basically getting to name and shame the authors for who does it at the last minute.
Exactly. The ones at the end, it's just like, yeah, okay. When you know the story, whereas if you were the first person to submit, well done. You're in the first opening pages. But fortunately, we didn't tell everybody. Guess what? This is going to be alphabetically ordered. Otherwise, I'm sure people would have gamed and managed to work the word aardvark in there somewhere. It's like, okay, what Java related piece can I open with aardvark as the title? Aardvarks to zebras and other ways of classifying things in an inheritance hierarchy. You know, that would have been a good hindsight tells me maybe there's a second book
just
here.
That's you, Kevin.
That might just be me, gaming the system. When you know the system, how do you game it?
When my husband was reading it, he was like, oh, I've just got like, this is the third one, which looks like this. I can't remember what it is. I'm looking at the index now. I think it's because there's four that start learn, which is quite cool, right? Because of course you want to learn something. But he's like, this feels a bit repetitive. I'm like, it's ordered alphabetically. But up until that point, he hadn't figured out that it was ordered alphabetically.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Actually, it's really interesting you pointing that out. I was just looking there. And yeah, there are five learns in a row. There are only two no's. Whereas I think the previous one, there was a lot of know this and know that and know the other. So there's only two no's. But yeah, it is. We've got two makes. They're very instructive there. It is kind of interesting. And obviously, there's quite a strong clustering around the letter J, but perhaps not excessively so. You know, so when you look at it like that, there's an interesting overlap there, and behavior gets a mention. It got a mention in the previous one. If you have to choose your favorite pieces, it's always kind of difficult because it also depends on what conversation you've just had and why. You know, if I've just been talking to somebody about something that is intensely curly bracket focused and detail oriented, and I say, well, you know what, funnily enough, there's a piece in here that deals with that is going to be front of my cache. You know, that's just like, that's the most recently accessed topic, and therefore it will associate very strongly with that. Whereas if I'm talking to somebody at kind of a bigger picture level, perhaps I've been talking to somebody about their career, then I'm going to think, oh no, you need to read this, that's the one. So favorite is very context dependent.
It is, and I'm thinking about that. We picked out four when we did the It was one of the go-to book clubs, the lunchtime book club. And when I went back to have a look at what those four were, I was really surprised that a different piece wasn't in those four, because I've been thinking a lot about this other piece. And I'm like, oh, I could have sworn I would have put that in those four. But it wasn't. So the one I'm thinking of is Jean's definition of done piece. But that's because at the moment I'm thinking a lot about planning, about arranging piece, about arranging work, about work in progress, about estimates. So of course I'm thinking about her definition of done piece, and I'm not thinking about garbage collection, for example, because I'm not doing garbage collection right now. But ask me next week, and it'll probably be something like, oh, like a couple of weeks ago I was doing the keynote for Java Zone, and it was about career advice for programmers. So I would have been like, oh, you should read my interview piece, because that's relevant at that time. So.
It is very much that. I actually had somebody last week ask me about what are my top five science fiction movies. So I gave them my top 13 and then top 20, because I just thought, well, I can tell you what the top three are. But beyond that, oh, that's quite difficult. And, and ask me next week and the answer will be different. And also I find that again, it's that context, exactly as you say, it depends what you've just been doing and where you've been focusing.
Yeah, and there are some pieces in 97 Things I really like because I didn't know that thing, or because I don't agree with it. And so, they really gave me a new perspective on stuff. And that's really cool too. But I think this book, it's worth reading with an open mind, because there's some pieces, especially when we're editing and trying to choose stuff, there's some stuff where I'm like, I'm not putting that in because I don't agree with it, you know? And you have to be really open-minded about, well, okay, step back from your prejudices and your background and your environments and the projects you've worked on, and have a think about, well, where is this author coming from? What were they probably working on when they came up with these conclusions? And are there things that you might learn from it which are going to be applicable in the future?
Yeah, I think that again, that editing thing is an interesting one, because it is that the criteria that we use for evaluating things, and it's one of those things that distinguishing between here is a thing that is, here's the thing I disagree with, whereas here's the thing that is factually wrong or is potentially damaging as advice. If you do this, actually, I can see there are going to be problems and I have reservations about that. And again, it goes back to that idea of trying to help the contributor say better what they're trying to say, which is not always what, you know, and there were a couple of cases where we did have to sort of point out questions of fact or you know, things that were known to be problematic, and people restructured appropriately or said, actually, I can't, that won't work in this particular context. And I certainly had that one in the early days of editing the book. So I think that's quite an interesting one. It's like, okay, as an editor, I don't totally agree, but I love the way you said it. Or we need to hear this so that somebody else can go, why don't I agree with that? Or actually, I do disagree, do agree, and it's made a difference to my daily work. And that's the role there.
It was really difficult trying to recognize what your own biases are and what your own preferences are. That was really educational for me. But I think also reading the book, I think that for anyone who's reading it, because obviously not everyone watching this is going to be editing their own book. But for anyone reading it, I highly recommend not instantly going to that place of nope.
Yeah. I think that's the other virtue of embedding potentially pieces that people may not agree with in a much larger context of things that they would find themselves in agreement with. There's a pause for thought rather than I reject everything, that kind of immediate feeling. But also the value of having relatively short pieces, don't ignore it. It's a couple of pages. See where it ends up. That may cause you to Google something. It may cause you to see things differently. There's always that chance.
Might just stick in the back of your head until that time when you come across that circumstance and you're just a little bit more open-minded.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech for lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.